Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Check out the critically acclaimed release, Curse of the Red River, the brand new full-length album by Baron Earth. This album combines the best elements of metal, prog, and more obscure psychedelic rock. Visit Peaceville at PEACEVILLE.com to buy the CD and to check out other great metal acts. Use the links in today's show notes of the Talking Metal podcast to open your iTunes and download Baron Earth.
Hi, this is Anthony Esposito from the infamous Ace Frehley Band, and you are listening to Talking Metal, your premier metal station.
Hi, this is Opp Liner from Baron Earth. You are listening to Talking Metal. Stay cursed.
Hi, this is Ace Frehley, and you're listening to Talking Metal. Keep rocking. All right.
What's up? This is Bam Margera, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
This is Bill.
And this is Brent, and we are in Mastodon. You're listening to Talking Metal, dude.
Hey, guys. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. John here. Turn the microphone over to Mark Striegel.
Hey. Just got back from a vacation, was out in Indiana for a few days, almost a week, actually. It's good to be back in the New York area and New Jersey area. We are taking a little lunch break here today from our jobs and talking to you from Midtown Manhattan 30 Rock today. We're going to get into the show in just a second here. We have Ali, a.k.a. Opu, from the band Baron Earth. He is the founder, bassist of the band, and boy, I tell you, they sound great. They are doing a sponsorship with us here on the podcast, and I'm honored because this is a great band.
No doubt about it. Really enjoyed hearing the material, and definitely proud to have Baron Earth as a sponsor for the Talking Metal podcast.
Make sure you pick up their new record. It's Curse of the Red River. It is out now in the U.S., and it's been out for a while in Europe. This band, again, is Baron Earth. They are from Finland. Why don't we get into a little music and hear an interview with Ali?
Sounds great. And then later on in the show, we've got Anthony Esposito from Ace's Band.
Without a
Hey, this is Mark from Talking Metal, and on the line we have Opu from Barren Earth. How are you, man?
Hi, Mark. I'm fine. Just like our album was released in Finland at Wednesday, and it's like pretty exciting to wait and see how it will be received.
So we are, of course, talking about the band Barren Earth and their new release, first full-length release, Curse of the Red River. Now, you guys had an EP that came out last, I believe, fall here in the States, but mm-hmm. this album is all new material, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We did the EP and the album in the same sessions, but of course, there are two additional demo tracks in the EP, but anyhow, we had like 11 songs from which we took two songs to the EP and put rest to the album.
Cool. Now, can you, for the Talking Metal listeners who might not know about Barren Earth, can you give us just a brief history of how you guys actually got together and who's actually in the band?
Yeah, well, we all know each other from the previous connections, and actually I've played with Marco in a band called Chaos Breed.
Right.
It was kind of old school death metal in the way of Entombed and stuff like that. And then Casper is also my old old friend from Amorphis, and we played together in the early 90s.
And Casper is the keyboardist, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we also had a kind of progressive rock band with Marco and Casper a few years ago. But that died up for some reason. And I've known Sami, the guitar player, lead guitar player, for a long time, from the early 90s. And I actually saw him playing live somewhere in the 80s already. So I've known him for quite since. And I've played also with Janne in... we had a death tribute gig when Chuck Schuldiner died.
Oh, okay. Chuck Schuldiner,
yeah.
Sure.
And that was kind of... that project kind of led to Chaos Breed. And Janne played in that tribute band called Evil Chucks. And, well, this is how we all know each other. And I started to put the band together in... 2007, and at first I called Marco and Janne, and there it started to snowball until we demoed four songs in summer of 2008, and after that we started to figure out who should sing in the band, and we all agreed that it should be We should have growling vocals and also clean vocals. And Marco recalled Mikko because Moon Sorrow, where Marco plays, in which Marco plays,
right.
Also they toured with Swallow the Sun. So and Mikko is the lead singer in that band. So they knew each other, and we all thought that he would be the guy for Barren Earth, so we called him and he agreed, and there it all started somehow. It was about a week after he agreed to join the band when we went to the studio to nail the lead vocals, and then we just started to spread the demo to various labels. And the Peaceful was the best one of them, which answered our call.
Cool. Well, we had the opportunity to hear some of the album, and I think it sounds just great. It has so many, I hear so many different influences from death metal to even like psychedelic, you know, music from like the 1960s and 70s. And I wanted to ask you about some of that. Are you a big fan of 1960s and 70s rock bands?
Well, yeah, I have to admit that I very rarely listen to metal music these days.
Really?
Of course, I stick to the old classics like Morbid Angel and Bolt Thrower and Entombed, stuff
sure.
like that. But not too many modern metal bands. Opeth is great, of course, and Paradise Lost. But
yeah.
I prefer the old ones anyway. So,
yeah.
But we all listen to 70s progressive rock music.
What are some of your favorites from the 70s?
Well, I'd say King Crimson, Floyd, Emerson Lake Palmer.
Sure.
And there were also great progressive rock bands in Finland during 70s, like Folkish progressive rock.
Oh, cool!
This is maybe the source which makes Finnish metal music quite exotic because, for example, we listen to those folky progressive bands from the 70s, Finnish bands.
What are some of those bands that you're talking about? The Finnish bands?
Okay, there is a band called Piirpauke. Actually, it's the guy who played flute and saxophone in some Amorphis albums. He is the main man from that band.
Oh, okay.
And also there is the band called Kingston Wall. They were active in early 90s, actually. But they are like a great influence personally for me. And then there was Wigwam, which was like a kind of prog band. They had a few great albums, also some bad albums, but those are the progressive rock bands. And we also did jazz, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and also when it comes to 60s, Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, stuff like that, Allman Brothers.
Right. Very cool. Very cool. A lot of great bands there. I was impressed by the cover artwork for the new record, Curse of the Red River by Barren Earth. Can you tell me about that? Who actually created the cover artwork?
Travis Smith is the artist who did the album cover. First of all, it felt a little bit too obvious choice for us because he has done so many like metal albums recently, like Opeth's maybe five latest album covers and stuff like that. So, but Peaceville wanted to use him, and of course we were excited to have him because we didn't expect to work with such an artist. So. Marco did some really rough sketch drawing for the booklet and sent it to Travis, and he
kind of expanded upon it.
Yeah. That's right. When he sent the first suggestions to us, like we were already sold. It's very old school. Still, there is like. Painting sort of feeling like it could be like a seen as a little bit naive like metal cover as well, but in our music there is this brutal and ugly side and then beautiful side as well,
right?
So this cover represents our music in that way.
Cool. Yeah, I think it looks great. I wanted to ask you, are there plans to tour?
Yeah, we've been planning to tour in Europe in next October and in Finland next May, but everything else is open. And it really depends quite much of the response, overall response for the album. If it goes well, of course, we will start to reschedule our plans. But, it's really hard to say at this point what will happen. But our aim is to tour, of course. And sooner or later, we will tour in America too. But it's very hard to say when.
Cool. Well, I would just want to remind the Talking Metal listeners that the album is, by the time you hear this interview on the podcast, will be out on iTunes and in stores. It is Barren Earth, and the album is called Curse of the Red River. It is out on Peaceville Records. You should definitely check it out, and we are thrilled to be featuring some of the music here on the podcast today. If we could get a Talking Metal ID from you saying your name, your band, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Yeah, sure. Hi, this is Opel Liner from Barren Earth. You are listening to Talking Metal. Stay cursed.
Great. Thanks so much for checking in with us. We wish you the best of luck, and the album does sound great. I sincerely mean that.
Okay, that's very nice to hear. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Big thanks to Opu from Barren Earth, a.k.a. Ali from Barren Earth, the bassist founder of the great Finland progressive death metal band And we are honored to have them as a sponsor here on the Talking Metal podcast. Show your support by using the links in today's show notes. That'll open up your iTunes, take you right to Curse of the Red River, and you can download that directly to your iTunes. Or go to the Peaceville website where you can purchase the actual CD. We have Anthony Esposito coming up in just a minute. This is a interview that John conducted along with Victor from Mars Attacks. They interviewed Anthony a few weeks ago, and it was right after John got off a tour with Anthony and Ace. You guys did a little East Coast tour here, right?
Yeah, it was amazing, guys. Let me tell you, you know how much I love Ace Frehley, like all of you do as well, or many of you do. And it was an honor for me to go on tour with the guys. And let me tell you, Anthony is great. You'll hear this in the interview, but not only does he handle the bass duties, but he handles tour managing as well, and he does a great job at it. And it was just fun to hang out with all those guys. I've been talking to Todd Youth a lot on the phone. He's back in L.A., and you know, all of the guys, Anthony, Todd, Scotty Coogan, and the whole crew, everybody is really cool, and just had a great time hanging out.
Cool. Well, let's get into that interview in a minute. First, we have a few letters we're going to read. I wanted to mention I'm very excited that Tony Iommi is working again with Ian Gillan. Did you hear that? They're going to be writing some new material together.
That is great, man. I really was psyched when we had Ian Gillan on Talking Metal, and he was, you know, always one of my favorite singers since I was a little kid. Probably one of the first songs I ever played. Most guitar players, you know, were into the song Smoke on the Water, and I just loved that tune. And in that interview, if you go way back, guys, try to find that on the TalkingMetal.com site, you'll hear there was some really touching stuff that Ian Gillan said about Armenia. And I, as some of you may know, I have a connection to some Armenian people. So I always remember that interview specifically.
And the new music, of course, that he's working on with Tony Iommi will also benefit a charity, I guess, that is involved with Armenia. So that's very cool stuff. We're also happy to hear that Gilby Clark has announced his first show since he was in that horrible motorcycle accident, hit-and-run accident, actually, last January. So he is back on his feet, I guess, and will be playing in Redondo Beach, California at Brixton on May 28th.
You know what? Believe it or not, that is the same town that we interviewed Don Dokken in. And I have another neat thing. Remember when, and you guys will hear this, we asked Anthony Esposito in the interview, you know, what does he think about Dokken reuniting with George Lynch? And he basically really didn't have any comment, but he has since gotten back to me, and he does have a comment. Basically, it's they're doing it because they have to, not because they want to.
What does that mean?
I think that means that, you know, they really don't want to. You know, it's not like their favorite thing to get together, but I guess, you know, the music business is kind of tough right now, and I got the vibe that that means that, you know, they're just looking to make a living, and this is probably the only idea they got left.
So Doc and the band can probably make more money booking a gig with George Lynch on guitar than they could with John Levin or somebody else for that matter.
Right, right. That's what I take from that short comment. And so take it for, what's that expression? Whatever you guys want to read into it, but that was the comment. I don't want to put words in Anthony's mouth, but basically Anthony just said they're doing it because they have to, not because they want to, in his opinion.
Cool. I'm reading right now a great book called Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. It's about this kind of gothic, maybe heavy metal-ish type rocker and some haunting that he has going on in his life. And it's written by Joe Hill, who is actually a.k.a. Joseph Hillendale King or something. He's Stephen King's son. And it is a great book and definitely has a rock and roll vibe. A lot of talk about some of our favorite rockers like Trent Reznor and Ozzy Osbourne and stuff like that in the book. So highly recommend that to anybody who likes a good scare. Speaking of Ozzy, I just completed his book, I Am Ozzy, which is also another great read. Highly recommend it to you guys out there. You want to read a letter, John?
Yeah, sounds good. This letter is from Rob. It says, "Hey, Mark and John, I just wanted to tell you guys how much I love your Talking Metal podcast and just everything you two are doing for metal and sci-fi in general. I first discovered your podcast about 2 months ago, and at first I just downloaded the more recent episodes, then went right back to episode 100, started from the beginning. I find your deep love for metal music to be refreshing and educational at the same time, as well as pretty damn funny. One of my new favorite sayings is, that's out of control. And for the guy that said he thinks you guys are cheesy, well, I think you guys are just the right amount of cheese. And I mean that in a good way. Like, no one or nothing in metal has ever been cheesy. Yeah, I mean, just look at some of the death and black metal bands out there. Talk about cheese. But then again, in a good way. Anyway, a bit about me. He just turned 44 yesterday, March 12th. And he's a total metalhead, music, sci-fi, horror freak for life. And he's from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And he goes to as many shows as he can. So, Rob, thanks very, very much. I love your email address with the Bathory reference. And we really appreciate your taking the time out to listen to Talking Metal.
Cool. And speaking of cheese, here is some Village People news from Alex. Hey, love the show, but I wanted to fill you in on the correct info on the Village People. The original cop was, as mentioned, married to the wife on the Cosby Show. That was Victor Willis. Victor was replaced by Ray Simpson in 1979, who, as mentioned, sang backup vocals on Kiss's song Tomorrow and Tonight. Also, the Village People do perform with three original members. Philippe Rose, who is the Native American. I still call them Indians, yeah, myself, yeah. But I guess that's not PC. Alexander Brilli, who is the soldier. And David Hodo, who is the construction man. And, I guess he was out of the band from 1982 to 1987, but apparently is now back. The band is rounded out with Jeff Olson, the cowboy, who has been a member since 1980. Ray Simpson, who is the cop, and I guess has been the cop since 79. And Eric, who is the biker since 1995. Anyways, he has set us straight on our Village People talk from, I guess, a few episodes ago. And Alex says, figured I'd update you and correct you. Ha ha ha. Love the show. Take care, Alex Bagboy Walker. Thanks, Alex. We appreciate you setting the record straight on that.
Yeah, I always remember that name, David Hodo. I guess back in the old days in the 70s, and you know, Village People were on Casablanca and Kiss were on Casablanca, so I would see stories about them in you know, some of the same magazines. And I think they actually had Village People cards too back in the day. Like, you know, Kiss had Kiss cards, they had Village People cards. And I think my cousin had a pack. I don't think we understood that they were gay and all this.
Right, no.
Except some of those dudes weren't gay, apparently, now.
Yeah. Well, anyways, again, guys, support Barren Earth. We had their interview earlier in the show. Again, go to iTunes and download those tracks. John and Victor interviewed Anthony Esposito from Lynch Mob and Ace Frehley. And I wanted to mention that Victor has a show called Mars Attacks, which is on markstriegelradio.com. And that is on every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So check it out. It's a great show.
Yeah, let's talk about
how. Why don't we tell the listeners about how this interview came together with me and Victor doing an interview. And basically what happened was Victor was in town and you guys decided to do a live Mars Attacks show. So Victor and you know was nice enough to invite me down to be part of it, and you were there. So I did an interview with Victor and Anthony, and then you did an interview with Victor as well.
Yeah, we interviewed Joey Z, which we will bring to you in a future podcast. And what we'll do, Mars Attacks is a great show, guys. You definitely got to tune in. And we will actually, on today's show, after the Anthony interview ends, we'll just let the rest of Mars Attacks play out in its full, in its entirety, here on TalkingMetal.com. So check it out and enjoy Talking Metal and enjoy Mars Attacks. I believe Mars Attacks is also now available in podcast form.
Definitely, definitely.
Here's a little Lynch Mob when we'll get into the interview.
Yeah. We're going to hear a little bit from Anthony back when he was with George Lynch and Lynch Mob. We're going to go into the interview and then come out with some more music and then just some chatting from Talking Metal Guys and Victor from Mars Attacks.
Cool. And if you don't own Anomaly, Ace's album yet, definitely go pick it up.
Yeah, definitely. Special thanks to Anthony Esposito for appearing on the show. Thanks, Ben.
Phone after much technical difficulty here, we have Anthony Esposito, former...
Finally got through.
Sorry about that, Anthony.
Okay.
So, most of you people know Anthony probably from Lynch Mob, and there are some of you out there that obviously know him from Ace's band as well. So, aside from that, also wanted to mention that we do have John Astronomy in the studio, who... does work somewhat closely with Anthony as well.
Hey, Anthony, it's John.
Hey, John, how are you feeling after that last run?
It was great. It was great. Ace just, I texted you before. I sent him away today in the limo to the airport, and after a few days of post-tour production here in the city, and it was a great run. And, Anthony, I wanted to tell you how great of a job that I know that you did. You know, handling the band and tour managing this tour. And I think it's amazing that you really like not only to handle the bass duties, but you really like to do the tour managing.
Yeah, I kind of get, I'm kind of like bored out of my mind if I don't have something to do. And, you know, it's like you end up sitting around in hotel rooms all the time, just waiting for sound check and then waiting for the gig to start and then doing it again, you know, driving to the next town and waiting again. I kind of like the added responsibility of watching the numbers, counting the money, and making sure everybody gets everything done right. And I like the responsibility. It makes the day go by faster.
And it works like clockwork, Anthony. You guys are amazing the way that, you know, you've got the gear travels,
As long as it's got to the plane on time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's my duty. And we were good.
Part.
What's that?
You have the hardest part. Yeah. Taking care of Ace is the hardest thing to do.
But yeah, we did great. We had the three gigs were amazing, and I'm just looking forward for more to come.
Yeah, I'm really loving the new lineup. I'm really loving what Todd Youth brings to the band. We really enjoy playing on stage together and with Scott. And it's a really great, it's a fun bunch to be around. And it's just really a great situation to be in. And everybody who's involved just wants to, like,
play more. You know, we just want to keep playing and, you know, and just keep working it because we really enjoy it.
No doubt about it.
Cool. And as far as the tour managing is concerned, is this the first time that you've done that with a band?
Yeah. And I picked Ace to do it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. One of the most legendary names. Let's just take a, you know, first stab at, you know, going with something big. Why, you know, look for something little? So,
but, you know, I ran a recording studio in New York for 15 years. And also my other job that I do is I design sets for TV shows and commercials and touring bands and videos and stuff. So, I mean, I'm running two companies.
Huh.
And it's kind of like, it's the same thing. Numbers are numbers, and
okay,
business is business, and what comes in and what goes out, and you just got to keep track of everything. And so, I mean, I guess that primed me for that, you know?
Gotcha. Okay. And how did you initially get involved with Ace?
I was introduced to him by a Hell's Angel.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, it was... the gentleman has passed on since the introduction to Ace, but he just said basically, you know, you're somebody who needs to meet Ace, and Ace needs to meet you, and he thought that the two of us would work well together, and that I would help Ace be Ace, you know, and I'm glad it's a great relationship. Ace is one of my best friends, and I really enjoy playing with him, and he's a musical genius.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doesn't get one-tenth of the credit that he deserves as a musician or a guitar player or just an artist. You know, he's so gifted, and I feel lucky to be around him, you know?
I'm with you there 100%. I think that's one of my most common fought battles is, you know, going out there and saying, you know, Ace is maybe given a tenth of, you know, the credit that he deserves with so many things, not only what he did with Kiss, but as a solo artist, different things that he's done to push the envelope over the years and how many people he's actually influenced. You know, that's what's amazing. I was talking to John and Mark before. We were saying how, you know, the artists themselves don't start a lot of this, you know, crap that's stirred up. It's a lot of, you know, people on the internet or whatever, but a lot of artists actually dig Ace, you know, and are very influenced by him. And a lot of big names, you know, we're not talking about, you know, everyday cover bands. So
as big as they get, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how much were you involved in actually helping Ace out with Anomaly? I know that you wrote some of the songs and
I didn't write any of them.
You didn't? Okay, you played on some of the songs.
In the beginning, he wanted me to co-write with him, and I told him flat out, I'm like, if I co-write with you, that's just going to get in the way of what the fans want.
Okay.
I think the fans want what's in your heart and what's in your head right now, because you haven't done a solo record in so long. I was just like, if I intersperse anything that are my ideas, it's just going to get in the way of what the fans want to hear. They want to hear what's going on in your world right now. And I said, I'll be happy to be your brain.
Okay.
And I'll remember, okay, yeah, the last time we did Pain in the Neck, we did three verses here, and then we went to an A chord, or you know what it is. And I was sort of like the documentarian of the whole thing, but he had a bunch of like little digital recorders that he had, you know, noodled around with song ideas while he was out on the last Kiss tour, and there was some old stuff floating around that he had done. And we got into a room. It was me, him, and Anton Figg.
Okay.
And we just basically sort of flushed the songs out and played them. And it's a lot easier when you're in a room playing the songs live,
right,
to change parts on the spot and go, oh, okay, let's try this section from this other song and here. And you know what I mean? It's just so easy,
right,
just to do it automatically. So it was basically me. It was basically Ace, Anton, and myself. And that was when I still had my recording studio. And so we basically got together and worked on the tunes and then started rolling tape. And at that time, Jay Messina was engineering, who had engineered all the Jack Douglas records that he did, all the early Aerosmith and the John Lennon records and all that stuff. So we had a really great engineer.
Okay.
And and he was just capturing it all on tape. And then I lost my lease to the studio, and we brought my gear up to Ace's house. And that's when we transferred a lot of this stuff into Pro Tools. And Ace started doing all his guitar magic and doing his vocals and stuff. And I was involved pretty much three quarters of the way in. And then I sort of got a little bit pushed away from the whole project, and it sort of got hijacked by somebody else. And then it went to L.A., and he did Fox on the Run and mixed it in L.A. And that was it.
Okay. And did you have any involvement in picking the rhythm guitarist or going with Scott Coogan or anything, or was that all just Ace?
Yeah, Ace sort of like, originally I wanted Todd to do it, but Todd was already scheduled. We had those dates in the beginning. The first show was right around Halloween at the Hard Rock in Times Square, and we did an unannounced show at Chance in Poughkeepsie. Okay. And Todd had already committed to Glenn to go out with Danzig for a Halloween run that year.
Gotcha.
So Todd was actually the one that I really wanted to do in the beginning. And then we had this other guy who I really wanted it to do as well. His name was Jason Hook. And Jason was actually had the spot. And then we went back and did the record, and he couldn't wait because Ace was doing all the recording, obviously, of the guitars. So he couldn't wait around for 8 months. So he went out with Alice Cooper, and now he's in Five Finger Death Punch.
Right.
But so when this opportunity came back, then Todd just walked right back in. He was one of our initial two that we wanted. And Scott was an old friend of mine because he was played on that amazing record that seems like nobody knows about, with Oni and Rowan, called Violet's Demise. After Oni left Lynch Mob, they were on Atlantic, and Dave Jordan did that record with them. And I was always like, he was one of those drummers that I always wanted to play with. So Ace was like, do you know any guys that you'd be interested in playing with? And I was like, well, this is the drummer that we got to get down. And we didn't even audition anybody else. Scott came down, and it was done. And then when Todd and Jason couldn't do that run, we basically held an audition in New York, and we had about 10 guys come down, and I think I got 9 out of the 10 of them down there, and Derek was one of them.
Okay. So the switch from Derek back to Todd wasn't that there was any animosity or anything. It was just that you guys wanted to go with the original plan with Todd.
Well, I mean, that's an Ace question. I mean, you know. But it was time to make a switch, so we made it.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. And going back to, you mentioned Oni Logan, going back to Lynch Mob, what is the difference between working with Ace as opposed to George Lynch? Because they're both, you know, guitar masters.
Ace's band, it's like, it's not a band, it's a solo thing.
Okay.
So I'm a hired musician. In Lynch Mob, I was a band member, equal cut, equal say.
Okay.
It was a different situation because, I mean, Ace's thing, you know, the end of the day, it's still a solo thing, and it doesn't matter what I say or do. It matters Ace has the final say on everything.
Gotcha.
But in Lynch Mob, it was like it was a band, you know, and, that was just the way it was, and then it started. He started to make decisions that I didn't agree with, and that's when I decided to leave.
Okay.
Like 94, 93, or whatever that was.
Mm-hmm. And you did that second run, though, when the Revolution...
Yeah, I did a second record. Oh, no, I did. I toured on... I'm on Wicked. I did Wicked.
Right.
And then I did the next record that was the self-titled one.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
I did that tour, and then I quit.
Right.
And then I ended up going back and doing this run in, like, 97.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we were all ready to put a band together, and it was going to be George and me, and we were trying to get Oni and Mick back, but it sort of fell apart. And then he sort of did the Smoke This record without me knowing about it.
Oh, okay.
I called him one day, and I'm like, well, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, well, I'm recording a new Lynch Mob record. I'm like, how are you doing that when I'm in New York? He goes, oh, I got these young kids, and I'm doing this rap record. And I was like, oh, man. And then I went back again. I was in A&M Studios walking the halls and saying hi to my buddy Joe Barisi was doing a record in there. And I went and said hi to him, and George was across the hall doing a solo record that he was basically redoing all old Dokken and Lynch Mob songs like Detuned to Be or whatever. And I just walked in, and he goes, you know, I don't have a bass player to play on this. Do you want to play on it? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I thought it was a solo record, so I got paid a salary. And then when it came out as a Lynch Mob record. And I'm like,
right,
wait a second here. I thought it was a solo album, you know? And I'm like, no, well, now that you know you're on it and Robert's on it, so we're just going to call it Lynch Mob. And I was like, well, if it's Lynch Mob, I'm a band member. I'm not a salary guy.
Right.
You know, but that's the way it is with George. Things always pop up out of left field, and you end up getting screwed.
What do you think, Anthony, about George going back to work with Dokken?
I could care less. I honestly could care less. I mean, whatever. Who cares? I don't know. I'm an Ace World right now. I'm playing, you know, with a true guitar hero that I think is just an amazing, great guitar player. And you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, we were talking about doing another Violet's Demise record with Oni, Rowan, Scott, and me, which would, I mean, it seems like now we have some time off with Ace. So maybe I'll go west and we'll work on that now with Oni and Rowan.
Cool. Now, Anthony, do you have any plans to set up another version of Schoolhouse Studio somewhere?
Yeah, I have one in my guest house now. I'm trying to build ISO booths as we speak.
I think that's a great idea.
I sold my Neve console. I had the Neve console from Electric Lady, and I sold it to the guy who owns Telefunken Microphones. So I'm going to miss that. That's a big part of the sound we used to get. But, I mean, I still have the 2-inch tape machine and the Pro Tools rig and all the outboard gear. And I'm in the middle of Pennsylvania on a horse ranch now. And we have a guest. My wife and I have started a horse rescue, and we have a guest house. So I've kind of set up a studio in there, and I'm looking forward to getting back to that.
Very cool. Now, Anthony, back to the band. I just want to tell you the feedback that I'm getting from everyone, and everybody is saying that they think that the band is not only tighter, but I think people can even tell how much the band is getting along with each other, and everybody's saying that they just think it's a perfect fit right now. And it's amazing. Yeah, oh, I will. I absolutely will. And I mean, literally everybody that I've spoken to has said the exact same thing. Like the band looks great. The band looks like they get along. The band sounds great. And I'll tell you, I had a great time at the first show, but by the third show, I felt that the band was really in sync. And like I said, I wish that there were, you know, a fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, and, you know, 20th show.
It's kind of a tease because the way we're touring right now is like, we did maybe 10 shows in the Midwest around November.
Right.
And then we went, then we had like 3 weeks off. And then we had like 10 shows right before Christmas in Europe. And then we had like a month off. And then we did 5 shows in Australia. And then we had like a month and a half off. And then we did 3 shows on the East Coast. So it seems like it's such a tease because just when we're starting to get really good, it's kind of like, then we stop,
right.
You know? And I mean, we're a rock band. We're an old school rock band. We don't run any samples or loops or there's no Pro Tools rig under the stage. Like what you see and what you hear is what you get. And like, we're all seeing for real. And it's kind of like we get into a groove. And then once we just start hitting our stride, it seems like we stop again. So we're the kind of thing where I think where we need to be out there and just keep playing and showing people that Ace is on fire right now. He's playing like the best he's ever played, and it's such a good vibe, and it's such a good situation, and we're laughing and genuinely having fun. I mean, how did you not have fun playing like Shock Me with Ace Frehley every night? I mean,
right.
It's like every kid's dream, you know?
Absolutely, and that's, you know, that also has to be part of the allure of playing with Ace, just being able to kick back and play all these classic songs and say, you know, holy crap, I got the man playing, you know, the solos and singing along to everything.
My first show I ever did ever as a kid was like a talent show in the fifth grade.
Okay.
And I played 4 songs. 2 of them were Kiss songs and 2 of them were Ramones tunes. And then I got to play the Ramones songs. I was in this band called The Remains with Dee Dee Markey and CJ. And
oh, okay.
I got to play those 2 Ramones songs with them. And now I'm playing the two Kiss tunes with Ace now every night. So it's kind of like awesome full circle, you know?
Right. Absolutely. That's, you're completing the circle right there.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
So for you, you would hope that Ace would have a big long tour lined up and you guys could just go out?
I hope we go out for a year. Okay. I really do. I think that we haven't done enough shows on Anomaly yet to promote that record. That record's so great.
Right.
We need to get some more of the Anomaly songs into the set list. And it was like we played like maybe five songs off the record live already, but we've never played more than two or three in the set at a time. And I think that we need to bring, like, we only did two on this last run of three shows
right.
in the set. And I think we need to put a couple more in there. And because it seems like what I've been reading online, people want to hear the new stuff live. And you know, but it's so hard because Ace's repertoire is so killer. So it's kind of like, you look at the set list and you're like, okay, we want to put Foxy and Frio Outer Space back in, but what are we going to take out?
Right.
It's already like an hour and 45 minutes long, so, you know.
Yeah, I'd actually seen you guys out in the Viper Room, and you guys did Sister, Space Bear, and Outer Space off
of
Anomaly.
Yeah, I don't like to call it Space Bear. The original title of that song was Skells, and I think that song is just a nasty killer Ace lick, and to call it Space Bear kind of is like spoofing it up a little bit too much. I mean, originally the song title was Skells, and then they were going to try to put the Tom Snyder Space Bear interview over the top of it, and supposedly it didn't work out, so they pulled the interview out, but they kept the name of it as Space Bear, but I always call it Skells.
I see what you mean, Anthony, because, you know, it's such a killer tune, and then if you give it a sort of a novelty name, it almost diminishes like how killer the tune is.
It's like calling Parasite, like, you know, Cupid's Arrow or something like that.
Tune is like, awesome, yeah.
It's such a nasty lick, and then calling it Space Bear is kind of like doing it no justice, you know?
Right.
Well, the iTunes version actually does have the samples over top of it. There's Space Bear, and there's a Space Bear reprise, which has the little sound clips of him, you know, during the interview saying, it's a Space Bear and all that, so.
We cut that live. That was like, that was a one take in the studio. It was Ace, Anton, and me, and we just went for it, and that's what it came out. It's just a nasty lick. It's so cool. And originally, I think that he was trying to get Slash to trade off solos at the end, and due to scheduling, it didn't work out. But the ending on that was supposed to be Slash and him trading solos.
Okay, cool.
Maybe you guys can make that happen live sometime.
Yeah, that would be awesome. He already came up with us, though.
So. Yeah. But bring him back up again. And I still think Foxy and Free is one of the greatest just Ace tunes of all time. So
I love it. I want to open with that.
Yeah, believe me. I swear to God, Anthony, I was thinking the same thing. I think that would be a great opening track.
I said that from the beginning, and do that, and then go into Rocket Ride and Parasite, you know?
Right.
But, like, open with a new song. Everybody seems to open with a new song.
Well, I'll put that in Ace's ear, and I know you've already done it, so between both of us, maybe we'll make it happen.
I've done it a bunch, because it starts off with that ticka-ticka-ticka-ticka-ticka.
Yeah, it's amazing.
All the accents, we could do lighting cues and all that. It would be killer.
No doubt, Anthony.
Cool. Would you mind doing a quick ID for us?
No, not at all.
Okay, if you could just mention your name, the name of the show, Mars Attacks, and anything else you want to throw in there, that would be cool.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Anthony Esposito from the infamous Ace Frehley Band, and you are listening to Mars Attacks.
Okay.
Thanks, cool. Anthony, and can you do a talking metal one, too?
Sure. Hi, this is Anthony Esposito from the infamous Ace Frehley Band, and you are listening to Talking Metal, your premier metal station.
Killer, Anthony. Thanks, man. And I had a great time hanging with you, and I'll see you soon.
Let's book some dates. Let's go back out.
No doubt.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Anthony.
Thanks a lot.
Email me when it comes up.
Okay, we'll do.
All right, man. Thanks again.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Mars Attacks. Successful show, yeah. Two interviews. We kind of tag teamed it here. We had myself and Victor on the Joey Z one, and John and Victor on the
Anthony
Esposito. Yep. Yeah.
And Joey Z is a really nice guy. It was really cool meeting him. And Anthony, of course, is just a great friend. And Mark, we've known him for a long time now. And Victor, I have to say, it's a great experience meeting you in person finally. And great job on Mars Attacks. And I am always impressed when I'm reading Blabbermouth and I see some cool thing that says, you know, Bobby Blitz to appear on Mars Attacks, or all the different people that you're booking. Good job for doing that, man.
Well, I try. Mark knows I'm in constant contact with him, and
yep.
You know, usually throw a lot of feedback around. I throw a lot of crazy ideas at Mark, and
it's very yeah, good. Well, and I love
some
the fact
of which were great ideas. We still haven't made them happen, like a Kiss special, maybe a Vinnie Vincent special.
By the way, there's some minor Vinnie news.
Okay, oh. Well, Victor heard a rumor that there was going to be some news.
Yes, that's different news. Yeah, Victor, you heard that there's going to be some music coming out from Vinnie, right?
No, I just heard from one of, like a fan forum, when I interviewed Bobby Rock a few weeks ago. I contacted them and said, hey, you know, keep an eye out for this interview. And they said, well, by the way, keep an eye out in the next few weeks. We're going to have some news, but they left it at that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. What I read on a website called kissfaq.com, and it said that according to some forums, some people had said that there might be some new Vinnie music coming out. That's the news. But the news I was referring to originally was that Vinnie was brought up by Ace or by Eddie Trunk on Ace's interview with Eddie the other day, and out of Ace's mouth, he said last he heard, Vinny was wearing a dress.
Right. But is that something yeah. he heard? That's the same info.
He probably heard that on
TalkingMetalLive.com or something.
And what's funny, though, is that Eddie Trunk seemed to be kind of like freaked out. No offense, Eddie. Like, Eddie's a good friend of ours. Eddie seemed to be thinking, oh, my God, geez. Like, you know, I just want to know if that's true or not. But Ace was like, look, hey, if he wants to wear a dress, fine, let him wear a dress. And Ace seemed to think that, you know, that was just, you know, no big deal.
Right. Well, there was a couple of Kiss fans. These were hardcore Kiss fans. I forget their names, and I don't think they wanted their names mentioned regarding this. But these guys were hardcore. They organized conventions and had people from the actual band, you know, show up at the conventions. These weren't just like numbskull kids. These were
on the internet.
Yeah, these were true Kiss fans. You know, probably in their mid 30s, late or early 40s, for that matter. Real respectable guys in the Kiss circle. These guys were so in with Kiss that even when Kiss played the Garden in the 90s, Paul personally had a limo pick them up and take them to the show, and they know enough. They're in tight enough with the band where Paul Stanley knows who they are and stuff like that. You may or may not know who I'm referring to.
I know exactly who you're referring to. Yeah, I saw them recently too.
But anyways, they told me that back in the 90s, there was a convention that probably, I think, took place in Atlanta. And Vinnie Vincent was hired by them to come do whatever he does at the convention, speak. And he did that. He came down to the conventions and, you know, the convention and did his thing. And afterwards, they all went out to dinner with Vinny. And there was maybe six of the convention organizers there with Vinny, and they were all eating. And it was casual. And, you know, and one of them said to Vinny, so what's up next for you? And he's like, well, my wife and I are getting sexual reassignment. And no one laughed. I said, well, he was obviously kidding, right? And he was like, no, I don't think so. I think he was dead serious. I said, were people laughing? And he said, no. And I said, and you swear he said that? He said, he said it to my face. And he said it with a straight face. But knowing Vinny, because I've actually spoken with Vinny on the phone.
Yeah, that's amazing that you have.
Knowing Vinny, he is a jokester, a prankster. I happen to think it was just somebody, and I think he likes the shock value of things.
Right.
I think this is a one theory. I think that he said that to those people who were, you know, even though they were rockers, these people, they were kind of like conservative, straight-laced, you know, not really into like the alternative lifestyle or anything like that. I think he said that to freak them out.
Right.
Because here he is. He's a guy. He definitely enjoys wearing pink lingerie and some makeup, you know? And I think that alone tells you that this is a guy who likes to get a rise out of people, you know,
who likes
to have people go, oh my God, look at, you know, and freak people out like a lot of rockers do, you know, but instead of like, you know, like Gene Simmons spitting out blood and, you know, and he's acting a little transvestite or even gay, if you will, you know, and that freaks people out and does. And I think Vinny likes to freak people out. Now, my theory is that that's probably where this rumor started, because all six of these people
went
very connected with Kiss all went and started telling people that. And it probably ran from there. Now, after that, Vinny's wife ended up, I think, getting murdered up in Connecticut.
Right.
And it turned out she was
a prostitute
or call girl of some sort. So who knows what happened. Now, the one thing that gives slight credibility to the rumor is that he did show up at that one convention. What was that, Australia? And he looked very feminine, and he had like almost ladies' pants and shoes.
Yeah, well, there was a photo. You know what that was? It was actually not something where he appeared in front of people. If it's what I'm thinking you're referring to, it was that there was a store in Australia called Kiss World, and it was like basically a store where you can go buy Kiss products. It's not there anymore. And the people who organized that store traveled to the U.S. with these lithographs, and they had Vinny come and sign him. So there is a picture, one picture that exists, and it says like copyright Vinny Vincent, where he's holding a giant lithograph, but covering his entire body. So all you see is his head, and then you see his like legs and feet, and it appears that he has like ladies' pants and ladies' shoes on. But once again, and then conveniently he's covering his chest area, but
where he could have had implants.
Yeah, he could have had that. But on the other hand, maybe he's just trying to, you know, keep the rumor going.
Well, I mean, he's
by
a guy
doing
what, in his mid 50s at this point.
Yeah.
So I think he dolls it up. I don't know what his sexuality is. It's a little odd that his wife was a prostitute.
Right.
You know, he just may be like some kind of crazy sexual
maniac,
weird dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is a little odd that he would show up and get all dolled up like that.
Right.
You know, looking. But that's how a lot of the people remember him. You know,
right.
He may have been trying to embrace the Vinnie Vincent invasion image. You know, and all that stuff. So I don't know. He's definitely a weird, weird dude. He's definitely still out there somewhere.
Right.
He's still suing Kiss. He's like. I just finished Ozzy's book.
Wow.
Vinny is like the Bob Daisley is
like Bob
what
Daisley,
Bob
right.
Daisley is to Ozzy, Vinny is to Kiss. He really is. He's just the guy who keeps popping up with ridiculous lawsuits and
I like Bob Daisley. I feel bad that's all happening.
You know, I do too, but I definitely have a whole different opinion on things, especially after reading Ozzy's.
Well, that's
book.
Good. I've got to read that book, but
I just bought it. I plan on reading it once I get back home.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother discussion. I mean, Ozzy says in the book he was against re-recording those parts.
No kidding.
He kind of pawns it off on his wife, you know, but he says he understands it did have to be done. And he really, in the book, basically puts, you know, anyways, he puts his side of the story forth, and I buy his side of the story. I mean, it all comes down to one line he says in the book. He says, Bob Daisley thought that, you know, it was a band, and he said it was never a band. It was the Ozzy Osbourne album. It wasn't the Ozzy
Blizzard
Osbourne.
Of Oz
yeah,
is
right.
a band.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, and he says, if Bob Daisley is so great as he claims that he is in these lawsuits, where are all his hit records before Blizzard and Diary, and where are all his hit records after?
Right.
And he's right. He's right. I mean, you know, there's, and Bob Daisley's like, well, I wrote a lot of the lyrics. And Ozzy, I think Daisley claims he wrote all the lyrics. Ozzy claims he wrote some of them. You know, and Ozzy admits that Geezer wrote you know, 80% of the Sabbath lyrics. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, Ozzy didn't write the songs. No, wrong. Ozzy wrote all the melodies, according to Ozzy, to all his songs in Sabbath and, right. and on bet, the solo
I
records.
Totally believe
or most
that.
Of the melodies. And I mean, the bottom line is Ozzy's voice sold those Sabbath records.
Right. Right.
Along with Tony's riffs. Ozzy's voice sold his own records along with Randy Rhoads and, right. and Jakey Lee's riffs. And you know, songwriting aside, I mean, let's look at the Beatles, who are known as the first songwriters in rock music. On their first few records, they only wrote a couple of the songs. You know, Frank Sinatra didn't write any of his songs. You know, right. Elvis.
I was going to mention
didn't
Elvis.
Write
right.
many of his songs, but it's the way they took those songs and their voice sold the songs. You know, right. if Joe Schmo would have done those Elvis songs, they wouldn't have sold, you right. know, and if Joe Schmo would have done those Black Sabbath songs, as great as Tony's riffs were,
right. they wouldn't
and
have worked.
And as much as he, you know, invented the heavy metal riffs, Ozzy's voice really sold those records. And you know, it's funny when they got back together for the 1985 Live Aid, you know, Ozzy was the superstar, you know, and you know, that was real evident by that performance, you know, the Live Aid, you know, producers wanted Ozzy to rejoin Black Sabbath and all this stuff. And you know, I love the, I'm a little buzzed, by the way.
Hey, you sound very good, Mark. You sound like you're really on top of things. Yeah, you really do. Yeah, you sound good.
You're really on top of this Jack and Coke right here. Yeah, but
this is good conversation. This is good conversation.
Ozzy, as much as I love the Black Sabbath stuff without Ozzy, the Dio stuff is amazing. The Gillan album
yeah,
was
I
great.
Love that record.
Ian Gillan, that is. And, the, you know, I even enjoy the Forbidden, the Tony Martin album is a great album, but Ozzy will probably win this lawsuit.
Yeah.
Because he is so famous.
Right.
You know, and that's what it comes down to, you know.
And it's a shame. You mentioned this in the forum, actually.
Right.
With Ollie, where, you know, the scariest part of all of this is that he would make them relabel all those albums to not be Black Sabbath albums.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, I could see him doing that just because he did re-record the Daisley and Lee Kerslake parts. I could see him suddenly going, you know what? The stuff, okay, I could see him accepting the Dio stuff,
Dio stuff
maybe,
right.
because he talks about those. He even in the book mentions Born Again, which I was shocked he
well,
even mentioned
knew
it
that,
in the
right.
book. Yeah. He said that Don Arden said, you see that devil on that baby devil on the cover of Born Again, and he was talking to one of his friends. Don Arden is Sharon's
dad.
Yeah.
He goes, that's my grandkid.
Oh my God!
Referring to Ozzy and Sharon's son.
Son.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But I could see them pulling something like, no, we no longer want those releases to be called Black Sabbath because Ozzy is the true Black Sabbath, which maybe he is, you know,
right.
You know,
well, those releases were almost more like Tony solo records, weren't they?
They were, but still you can't change history.
Right.
They were released, you know, Cozy Powell and Tony Martin and all these great, you know, even Geezer. Which one was Geezer on? Forbidden? I think,
you know, I don't even
he
know.
He was on Cross Purposes.
Cross Purposes. Okay. Yeah.
Forbidden was the Tire and Headless Cross lineup with Cozy Powell and Neil Murray on
Neil
bass.
Neil Murray, okay, from Whitesnake, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be weird to go back and rename those albums.
And you know, no yeah. one has ever mentioned that in the press. It's just right. it's just this thing I have in my head. And the only reason I think that is because he did erase Bob Daisley's parts,
right.
you know.
But wouldn't it... those albums, a lot of them were named Black Sabbath due to Warner Brothers.
Right, and also, right. according to certain sources, Don Arden wanted to, you know, when Dio and Tony first got together to work on Heaven and Hell, which Geezer didn't come into the picture until later,
right.
and Bill Ward for that matter, they weren't going to call it Black Sabbath.
Right.
And management
made them.
Yeah. And the label wanted it to continue to be Black Sabbath.
Right.
You know,
Cross Purpose is the same deal. It was supposed to be called Butler, Iommi, Rondinelli, and Martin.
Right.
And at the last second, Warner Brothers or IRS, whoever they were on, said, no, 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 we're only putting this out as
if it's Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
What about Glenn Hughes? What was he on?
He was on
Seventh Star,
which coincidentally was called Tony Iommi's Black Sabbath, the only record that was actually...
Oh, okay, so they actually did call it Tony Iommi's Black Sabbath.
Yeah. Wow. That was like, what, five? Eric Singer was on that, right?
Yeah.
Five guys in the lineup, I think.
Yeah, they had Dan Spitz's brother was a bass player.
Dave the B. Spitz.
Oh. They had an official keyboard player. Well, Greg Downs is his name. He was always their keyboard player.
Right, and then
player.
Now he's an official player. So why do keyboard players always, you know, they're always like in the band, but they're not considered a real member?
That's just heavy metal.
Yeah, heavy metal doesn't like keyboards, I guess.
You remember Iron Maiden behind the Iron Curtain when they went to Poland?
Yeah.
The guy was like, I play the heavy metal. And Bruce Dickinson was like, what instrument do you play? Yeah. He's like, I play keyboard. He's like, you don't play heavy metal on the keyboard? You know, and he's like, no, I do. He's like, no.
On March 4th, 1980.
Poor keyboard players.
Yeah, poor keyboard player. Here's my Rain Man status here. On March 4th, 1984, I saw Kiss at the Stanley Theater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I brought a keyboard player friend of mine. And Paul Stanley, like, one of the first things he said is, tonight you're not going to hear any synthesizers. And I was like, oh, my friend's probably like really sad right now.
Right.
So what about Derek, what's his name? Sheridan?
Derek Sherinian. He played with Kiss, but offstage. And then before Derek, a guy named Gary Corbett,
who I've met.
Yeah, you met Gary Corbett. Yeah, he's a great guy. We met
through
him.
Through you, actually.
Yeah,
in
Mark
Rhode
and
Island,
I met Paul and Eric Carr and everybody up in Rhode Island. And Gary Corbett also played underneath the stage and was a big part of the sound of the Crazy Nights tour. And he played up until he played the Revenge Club tour. And then after that, that's when I think they got Derek Sherinian.
Right.
But what a little known Rain Man fact, Gary Corbett co-wrote the song She Bop.
Cindy Lauper.
So that's Gary Corbett, but a great keyboard player. And anyway, feel sorry for all the keyboard players. No, we should get him on. We should definitely get him on.
We asked somebody about him. We played some of his music, I think.
Yeah. We should definitely look him up.
Engve was on his record, I believe. And even Zach, I think, played on his album.
Yeah.
Solo album.
Interestingly enough, getting back real quick to the Vinnie Vincent, at least Vinnie sued for all the albums he was on.
Right.
Whereas with Bob Daisley, the odd thing is he sued for the first two. He also played on Bark at the Moon, and he played on No Rest for the Wicked. Why has he never sued for those two albums?
Yeah, it's weird.
I don't know.
So, I mean, you would think that if they're withholding wages from the first two albums, they'd do the same for all three.
Right. Yeah, who knows? Did you know that that Vinnie Vincent lawsuit with Kiss wound up on Saturday Night Live in the, you know, Weekend Update?
No, I did not know.
Yeah, when the most recent Supreme Court, reconvened, that was one of the things that they considered on the first day, and I think they basically threw it out and... what's the girl that does Sarah Palin?
Tina Fey.
Yeah, I think she was the one that announced it. But anyway, it was so funny that the Vinnie Vincent lawsuit made it to Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, that is funny.
There was one where Vinny, I think it was a previous one, he sued Kiss, he lost, and then was ordered to pay Kiss's legal fees.
Right.
So that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was the previous lawsuit to this one. This one's what, regarding Kissery, I guess?
I don't even know. I think this is regarding maybe Kissology.
Or Kissology.
Yeah, Kissology, which is, you guys know, the VH1
DVD
box. And then also his... reference on Gene Simmons' Family Jewels, the A&E show.
They reference him?
There was something that he claims that, if I may be incorrect on this, but I thought that he might have said that they said something negative about him on that show, so that was part of it.
What is that, defamation of character or something?
Yeah, who knows?
That is a guy that is so obsessed, you know, that he's watching every single
thing that Kiss is doing, right?
Jeez, if Talking Metal wanted to start suing the people who talk bad about them, we'd
have a lot of lawsuits.
Yeah, we'd have a lot of lawsuits.
Why do you guys think he disappeared? I mean, Is it because he owed money? Because there were so many rumors that he owed all this money.
Now, the same guy who told me the story about them meeting and him saying he was having sexual reassignment told me that he, at some of these other ones, maybe it was the Australia thing where he showed up. He didn't want to leave the airport. Like he showed up there.
He
wanted to sign the merchandise that they'd given him $11,000 or something to come there to sign stuff. And he showed up and he was so paranoid that somebody was going to try to kill him that he did not want to leave the airport. But I guess got him too because it was in the agreement that he would.
It's weird.
And I mean, just really, really strange behavior.
And
like I said, I spoke with the guy once on the phone when he was doing an interview on, RPM radio in Chicago when I was a kid. And he was all doped up or something. Wow. Then. So I don't know if he's got like cocaine paranoia or bipolarism or what his deal
Apparently,
is.
Apparently, he put out some pre-orders for some kind of Vinnie Vincent box set that was $100.
And he never delivered it.
Right. But I don't think that's enough to be worried that, like, you know, people are going to be killing you. I mean, that's...
Well, I saw him at the T-Neck Kiss convention when he was doing that run.
T-Neck.
Yeah. Well, it was Fairly Dickinson T-Neck.
Yeah, I know Fairly Dickinson.
I saw him at the Jersey City Kiss Expo.
Well, Jersey City's at least bigger than T-Neck.
Well, he walked out and he had six guys around him.
Wow.
And I remember at the time they said that
What year was that?
It was whenever he put out that last EP, so it was like 95, 96, something like that.
Wow.
And at the time, the rumor was that his hero is John Lennon, and he's scared of succumbing to the same fate.
Yeah, but
nobody's
out there looking. I mean, like about three people know who Vinnie Vincent is.
Right.
Lennon was. I mean, I love Vinnie Vincent, but, you know.
Right.
Unless you're some kind of Kiss nut, like, you're not going to know who Vinnie Vincent is.
Right. No, I'm... obviously. And, you know, it was another thing that I brought up with Mark with all those invasion years. Supposedly he was bald underneath. He was wearing all these ridiculous wigs after Lick It Up. So we probably see him.
I don't think he was like a guy who was totally bald. I just think that my thought was always just that his hair was kind of like, you know, he had thin hair and he wanted this giant glammy looking hair. That's what I thought.
Could be.
Yeah, interesting.
Who knows? Vinnie Vincent.
Interesting person. I'd love to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, Vinnie Vincent,
I'd love
if you're
to have
listening.
Jakey Lee.
Yes.
Yeah, Jake would be another great one. Yeah.
Two guys just vanished, literally. Yeah. I mean, Jake released something a few years ago, cover of something.
It was all cover tunes. It was him with the bass player from Cactus, I think. And the drummer was Ansley Dunbar, I think.
Right, well, that's
another
a great drummer,
guy from White Snake, those old days.
And I don't recall who the singer was, but it was all blues material. And he did release an instrumental album previous to that, Fine Pink Mist, which is actually pretty good as far as, I mean, I'm not big on instrumental albums, but his album I actually appreciate.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he never backed... or never came back with anything as good as Badlands afterwards, you know?
That first Badlands record was great. And I actually now have the second one, which I used to have on cassette, but then lost. But somebody got me a download of it. And that's not bad. It wasn't quite as good.
I have
good
the third one as well.
Okay, I don't even know the third one.
Yeah, the third one was the demos that they were working on. And some of the material Ray Gillen actually used on a solo album. He put a solo album together, or it wasn't even a solo album. It was a project called Sun Red Sun, which was...
I remember that.
Yeah, it was Bob Rondinelli, who we mentioned before from Sabbath.
Right.
And the bass player was the original Alice in Chains bass player.
Mike Starr.
Starr.
He was now on a VH1 show.
Yeah. And the guitarist, I don't remember who it was, but some of the songs ended up on that. And then the rest are all
in
demo format on that... Badlands album. I don't remember the title right now, though.
Right.
Hey, guys.
Dusk is the title. I'm sorry.
I know we got to wrap it up, but I want to throw out three bands since we're having like this round table metal conversation and see if you guys have anything to say about these bands. Helix.
Helix. I don't have much to say. Heavy. What was their song? Heavy
Deep
Metal
Cuts
Love?
The Knife.
And then that Rock You.
Brock you. Do they have a song, Heavy Metal Love, though?
It sounds very familiar, Heavy Metal Love.
German band, right?
I thought they were from Canada.
Yeah,
Canada.
They're Canadian.
See, that's how much I know about them.
Okay, Helix, what do you think about Helix?
Yeah, Deep Cuts the Knife is the only song that I remember by them, and that was...
You remember that one, Gimme an R-R-O-O-C-K, What You Got Rock, What You Gonna Do
Yeah,
rock
I
you?
Do remember that.
That was a pretty good tune. But Brian Vollmer, I think he was... singer or the guitarist. Okay, how about this band, Kick Axe?
Again, we had one of those guys. Do we have a guy from Kick Axe on the podcast?
You know. I don't remember. Kick Axe, I thought they were a good band. I cannot name any of their songs. How about Lee Aaron?
Lee Aaron, Metal
Mistress or something?
Metal Queen. Yeah, Metal Queen. I have that record. I bought it on CD recently. Martin Popoff calls Lee Aaron the worst Canadian metal act of all time. Yeah.
That's funny.
Gave most of her records 0 stars.
Wow.
She looked great up on stage. She really rocked the spandex, if you will. And she basically just disappeared. I heard she had a comeback a number of years ago, though. But yeah, I do have some of her stuff on the iPod.
Yeah, she's either a jazz or opera singer now.
Something
and
like that.
She doesn't want to refer to anything of her metal years or anything like that.
She's not into it anymore.
Yeah. The Metal Queen record, which again I do have recently listened to, not that great. Not that great. No. But Bitch was a good
Right. I remember them. Betsy Bitch.
I actually do like them. That held the test of time. And I always liked the Wendy O. Williams stuff too.
Yeah, right. It was great.
Still holds the test of time, definitely.
No doubt. I liked Kerrang! Magazine. The reason I'm naming all these bands is many of them I've seen in old Kerrang! Magazines.
Right. Let's talk about Kerrang! Kerrang! I used to have to go to a special store to buy, and it would be enclosed in cellophane, and you couldn't buy it in regular newsstands. Right. It was imported, and it used to have the, 3 pounds sticker on it or something, and then they have the
American price just
stuck
sticker.
On. Yeah. Right. So Kerrang! was a great magazine. The first time I ever bought it, it came with a free floppy
flexi disc
of Quiet Riot. They had just released the record.
I didn't get that one.
Metal Health, and who my cousin Joel had turned me on to Quiet Riot, and they had the record. I still have it somewhere.
That's
cool. And one of those Funky Monkey podcasts or whatever that was. Remember that podcast like 5 years ago? He played the record.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's like, or maybe we played it.
Maybe we played it. We could have.
I don't think we played it.
5 years ago.
Anyways, it was like, hey, this is Kevin Dubrow, Quiet Riot. And here's my new song. And it was like Slick Black Clad Cadillac. And they do a sound up and then it'd come back and he's like, I'm so happy to be here giving you this sneak preview on
my
Kerrang! Of, and it was I had heard Metal Health and Come On Feel the Noise on the radio, but it was the first time I heard Slick Black Cadillac,
Well, that song, I believe, dates back to the Randy Rhoads years.
It does,
actually.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
So, and Kerrang! Kerrang! I had known from going overseas to Spain every year, and it was readily available in all the newsstands over there. Was Kerrang! And
Metal Hammer
were the two big ones. And it was always a thing where, they either had albums or stickers or posters or something extra to get you to buy their
Flexi disc thing was cool back in the day. It was like a
they used to do that
plastic record.
Exactly. And Guitar Player, too.
Oh, wow.
You used to be able to get a flexi disc of I remember the first time I heard what was that Joe Satriani song?
Sleeping with the Alien.
No, it was
Surfing.
Surfing with the Aliens. Sleeping.
Like,
see, I'm thinking of that. I want to sleep with female aliens. I don't know. Sleeping with the Aliens.
No, there was a Joe Satriani song that was on the Guitar Player flexi disc.
It was a Headless Horseman or something like that.
Was,
even before.
No, it was the EP. It was a live EP, and it had one.
Okay. It was like
something
Ice Nine or Crushing Day.
I think it was Crushing Day. Yeah. I think it was probably that. Not sure. But that was on there. Dweezil Zappa and Frank Zappa. together doing Charlena, which was the Zappa song.
Wow.
And Dweezil soloed on it. He was 16 at the time. Jeez. First time I ever heard him, and just shredded. I mean, amazing. But yeah, that was Eric Johnson.
I love
stuff released in there, and the guitar player used to do that thing back in the days of
now. They just put actual CDs and DVDs in magazines.
Well, right. CDs are so
easy, cheap and easy,
worthless, at this point. Yeah, one thing I am trying to get, do either you guys have the Iron Maiden tribute CD that Krang released?
No,
I have it.
Yeah, wow. You got to get me that. Okay, yeah. You got to get me a copy.
I have that.
Dream
I have.
Theater does To Tame a Land, right?
Yeah.
Do you know that they're touring with Iron Maiden now?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I want to see that.
And the rumor is Coheed and Cambria is opening up for them.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow. They're a Jersey City, or somehow related to
Jersey
City.
Yeah, one of the guys is from Jersey City. I think the rest of them are from up in Kingston, New York.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, local band for sure, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, Return to Earth, Q-Ball's band, has been signed to Metal Blade.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Huh.
They sold like 10 copies.
Yeah, and Ronan, Mark's band Ronan actually sold more copies than Return to Earth was signed, which makes me believe that Ronan or anything that we're working on could possibly be signed to Metal Blade.
Yeah, Ronan won't be because I think it's pretty much
broken
done.
Up. But, but maybe we'll do a talking metal album.
Yeah, man. I mean, I would be into it, especially if I thought there was any chance we could recoup the money that would have to go into it.
Right, you know? If we can just break even and maybe make a little money, it'd be cool. But at this point, we have so many friends who are musicians that are well-known musicians who kind of dig what we're doing, and I think that we could easily get them to jam with us, right?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility, definitely.
Yeah, no doubt.
Do some recording with us, definitely.
Right.
We'd like
the
to
talking metal jams.
Yeah, we'd like to bring that back. John and I actually were talking about that recently. Yeah. So guys, be sure to tune in every Thursday night for Mars Attacks. What are we looking at next week, Victor?
Next week we're gonna have a all music show.
Okay.
Gonna be centered around metal from the '90s. I think the '90s got a bad rap as far as metal is concerned. And there's a lot of great stuff that came out that, you know, maybe took the place of what people were listening to at the late during the late 80s, or people that had switched over to grunge and maybe didn't, you know, check out Testament's Low or things like that that came out during that decade. So you'll have 2 hours of nothing but 90s metal.
Cool.
Now, what about groups like Slaughter? I was a fan of those, but I know that kind of gets lumped into sort of a glammy thing. What'd you think of those bands?
Well, here's the thing. The one band that I always sort of go to bat for is Tesla.
Okay, yeah.
In the sense that a lot of people say, you know, they're an 80s band and, you know, they're a hair band and they were never really, you know, an image-orientated band. They came out towards the end of the 80s, you know, sort of like GNR. You know, would you lump GNR in with the hair bands, you know, after all these years?
Yeah, they wouldn't be lumped in the same category as Poison or, you know, Cinderella or any of those guys.
Right. So, and what I try to do is give a broad spectrum of what took place. You know, I did an 80s special for last week, and I did have, you know, Y&T, but I did have Metallica, I did have Testament, you know. I sort of try to give you a little of everything. I even had Poison in there.
Cool.
So
very good. I'm sure it's going to be a great show, guys, and make sure you listen to Mars Attacks on markstriegelradio.com and on iTunes.
Definitely. Guys, thanks for joining us. Hopefully, I'd love to repackage this whole thing in either a Mars Attacks podcast or possibly Talking Metal or both, maybe. If
you guys let's are do into it. That. Do it up.
Thanks to Jody and Jake from
everybody
Bionic
at Bionic
for hanging out. Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Thanks to the guests, Anthony Esposito and Joey Z.
Yep.
Cool. And yeah.
And thank you, Victor, for having me on your show.
Oh,
and
man.
And Mark, too.
Thank you guys for stopping by and adding some much-needed
banter.
I hope
we didn't hijack the Mars Attacks show from you.
No. It was fine. I think everything worked out great. And like I said off mic, you know, there were certain things where, you know, it was definitely, you know, it was good that you guys chimed in, you know, absolutely added to everything. So
thank you.
Cool. Great. Guys, have a good night. We're going to sign off right now. Talking Metal out, Mars Attacks out.
Take care, guys.
Good night.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.